intro song, just like the bad guys, but really he's not, because they're secretly good guys, but technically he's not.
I like it. The images are pretty dope too. All right, well, we're all back, all three of us.
This is the 39th episode of Carbonite Crew.
39th?
It's actually
is it the 39th?
I'm pretty sure it's not. It'd be amazing.
Actually,
if it were.
You know what, Daniel? You're not far off though.
What is it? Do you know?
You know, I can do some research and detective digging. Definitely.
Do some recon.
Over a period of time, you know, over the coming weeks and months, and realize that I was going to just say the number, but
whatever.
Oh,
whatever.
This will be 33, actually.
Oh, well, nice.
So,
well, what's up, guys?
What's
How's
up?
It going?
It's going.
We've had a lot of news since I think we last podcasted.
I don't even know the last time all three of us podcasted.
Yeah,
I think
I know,
probably
right?
Rise of Skywalker.
Didn't we have like a
podcast? So.
A what?
Like a practice session? I had like two practice
sessions.
Yeah,
we were
for
messing
recording.
Around with Zoom and Facebook Live, and that didn't go as planned. But here we are.
Right.
Here we are in our quarantine homes. And yeah, I know you two are working from home. I'm still going to work, sitting behind some glass, and... Yeah, all's well in the world for the most part. Not really, but
yeah.
Here we are. It sucks. Disney, you know, life sucks when Disney World's not open. That's the way I look at it. It's my gauge.
I don't know about you, man. I'm loving this quarantine. I think it's great.
Is that your bar for like tragedy and you know life's okay? Disney World's closed.
People are dying,
bro.
But Disney World is open, so
dude,
everything's okay.
Disney World is only closed like three or four times in its history, and this being one of them. So, like,
yeah,
it's serious.
It is serious.
And, like,
I agree.
All the Disney parks, not just Disney World. So, it's,
right.
It's serious, which, you know, there's experts that think it's not even going to open for until 2021. So,
yeah, that's what I was reading today. Yep.
And I'm not cool with that by any stretch of the imagination, but. If it saves lives, I'll hop on board.
Yeah. I mean, I think people's lives are just the most important thing in this situation. But
here's what we need to debate, though. Would you rather get COVID-19 or would you rather get food poisoning at Disney World?
You mean COVID-19 or the blue shadow virus?
That was a good, really good, entertaining arc. I mean... Keeps you on your edge of your seat the whole time.
Hey.
And then you're like,
food
wow,
poisoning.
This is kind of thinly veiled at Nazi Germany. Just a teeny tiny bit. The accent gives it away.
Just like everything else George Lucas did in the prequels.
Right.
Newt Gunray. All
right. Yeah, I mean, Palpatine totally wasn't like George Bush or anything.
Dude, I watched Revenge of the Sith last night. Whew, that Palpatine twist gets me every time. Never see it coming.
Oh,
wait,
that's good.
Wait, the 920 degree twist or what twist?
Right before that, you learn that he's the Palpatine. He's the Palpatine guy.
use my knowledge, Anakin. I beg you. That scene is probably one of my favorite scenes in that movie.
You know, I had it on last night, and like I wasn't like paying like 100% attention, but that movie really moves. Like
it does.
It gets
it's
going.
Got great pacing. It's got great pacing that like Attack of the Clones especially does not have.
Yeah, because I looked up at one point and I was like, I'm going to bed. And it was only like an hour and 11 minutes in. It was just over the halfway point, and that's when they were like trying to arrest him. I was like, we're only like halfway through this movie.
I always forget how much of that movie is there actually is in the back half, because it just flies. It just goes and goes and goes and goes.
I agree. I think one of the, and I think the
like,
best part
even
of that...
even after the Anakin and Obi-Wan duel, like there's still a lot of movie there.
Oh, exactly. I think the best thing they ever did too was never give you a timeline.
Right.
Because, you know, and it's one of the most argued things is it 3-4 weeks or is it like a week? Or is it a few days? No one really knows. And
I think it's a few days.
See,
personally.
I think it's like a few weeks. Like from the beginning. I think once you hit that middle point, it's all like within the next few hours and day. But
sure,
I think getting the Chancellor back and like all that, I think that's within like a week or two. I don't think that's...
If I see it from like Jonathan's perspective, you're basically saying Anakin was like, he could have turned just like that if it was within a few days.
Yeah.
Like, that's what you're saying.
I think he was kind of always there.
Tyler's kind of like, there's a lot of steps that need to take before you turn to the dark side, before you like just lose.
But not really. I mean, that's what the whole prequels are about, is setting those steps up. I don't think it's unreasonable to look at that movie and say, yeah, this is like 3 days, you know? Because I'll give you, like, there was some cleanup that was required, especially after the whole battle over Coruscant. I think probably the whole Senate scene, like, where they meet on the steps of the Senate, I think that's probably the next day. Like, the next morning, I think, is reasonable. Because, I mean, if you think about it logistically, like, Anakin and Obi-Wan are going to have to report back to the Council at the Jedi Temple. Like, the Chancellor is going to need to, you know, get first aid administered back to his office. They're going to have to start clearing the ship off the runway.
Yeah, they didn't look dirty or anything either. Like,
Right.
I would agree with that.
So I really think that's the next day. But I think from there, everything goes pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And that's brought up a really good, like, one of those, what we used to do, our little scenarios or what-if scenarios or, you know, but you brought up, Daniel, that, you know, Anakin was only just a few days from turning to the dark side. What if we rewrite the whole script? Because it's very well documented and known that Mace Windu kind of hindered, used that anger and stuff, used both when he fought, and that was kind of his thing. You know, he could channel that, I don't want to say dark side, but that balance.
Right.
What happens if he kills Palpatine? Does that tip him? Just enough?
I think it absolutely does.
You know?
I think, well, if you even look at, like, the Chancellor being who he is, and depending on what legends or canon sources you look at with the movie, like, there's this whole thing in Legends that, and I think this is retcon now, I think this has been directly contradicted, but, like, one of the big things was in Legends, and I think it's kind of dumb, but it's cool, too. The whole melted, shriveled Palpatine face, that was his true face. That was him already being pre-twisted by the dark side and his mastery of it. But part of the whole reason that he was able to not be detected by the Jedi for years and years and years of working with them and being in the same room with them almost every day was the fact that he had this dark side power, and I don't remember if it was ever formally named, but he was able to create an illusion, a mask, using Sith sorcery. And I almost wonder, obviously that doesn't count anymore, but I almost wonder if killing him would have resulted in some sort of, you know, dark side emanation in the Force, and what that would have done to both Mace and Anakin at that point. Like, does Mace turn to the dark side and then Anakin kills him, and then we're in this weird limbo where Anakin has simultaneously killed the Sith Lord in charge of the Clone Wars, but he's also murdered one of the Jedi Council masters. Like,
yeah, and the crazy part is there's only three people in that room, right? So,
yeah.
Like, who do you believe? The only one that's left. And I think one of the biggest things I think that, like, kind of leads me to think it might have been a few weeks was there's a whole conversation with Anakin and Padme where they're talking about the tipping point of the war and the things are changing, and Padme brings something up where, you know, maybe the Republic we've been fighting for isn't exactly what it was. And Anakin outright says, like, you're sounding like a separatist. Like, that makes no sense at all. So he goes from, you make no sense at all, to, you know, 2 days later, like, the Jedi are evil. Like, I don't...
Well, I think the whole Jedi, the Jedi are evil thing is just him being tainted by the dark side. I really think he kind of, at some point, probably post-credits, like post what we see of him being in the Vader suit, I think he probably had a moment of clarity and realized that think he's in his right mind when he's doing and saying all these things as Vader. Like,
right.
I mean, because if you just look at how devastated he looks like when he bows down to Palpatine finally, and, you know, Palpatine names him Vader. He looks like a broken dude. Like, he's down on his knee, and, like, just the look on his face, he's in anguish. He's in turmoil.
I mean,
But, like, what is he going to do at that point? Like, there's no way he would have beaten Palpatine at that point. Like,
or could he have?
I don't think so. Not in the emotionally compromised state he was. Like, I think if Anakin made a single move towards Palpatine in that scene, like, after Windu's gone, he's just done. Like,
I think I'm looking back at, like the memes that I see that are, like, that always end with, you know, directed by George Lucas at the end. So there's the one that's, like, Mace turns and is like, oh, he's too dangerous to be left alive. And then he's like, I need him. So Mace is like, they like insert the caption, and it's like, if you let me kill this dude, I'll give you one free pass to break any rule you want. And it's like, cool, can I marry Padme? He's like, yeah, that's fine. And then it says directed by George Lucas. But I'm like, so what you were saying, I would say rewritten, Mace kills him, and somehow, like, the Force spirit version of him would go to the nearest source of power, which wouldn't be Mace. I think it would be Anakin. And it leads sort of into that whole, like, if Rey kills me, I'll become all the Sith in her, you know?
I think without a better explanation from Rise of Skywalker, I don't know that Palpatine could actually do that at that point in time. Like, if you look at him consolidating power, making the Empire, and having, like, what, 28 years, somewhere in there, to, like, do stuff. You know, the acquiring Sith artifacts and Sith knowledge would be a lot more difficult for him to do during the Republic time, with all the Jedi running around. Like, he got away with a lot of stuff by blinding the Jedi through the Force and, like, their own corruption, but, like, not that it would be impossible, but it's a lot easier when you run the entire galaxy to find these Sith manuscripts and holocrons and ancient texts and things like that. I really doubt that he's capable of that kind of power at that point. I might be wrong, but that's just my take on it.
I feel like I can't really argue with that.
I think
so,
at this point...
To beat death is a power only one has achieved.
I think that was a straight up lie.
Why?
Or it goes back to the whole Bane thing, where I know Jonathan and I have had discussions about this years ago. Mm-hmm. We started, where is Palpatine really Bane from the get?
Yeah.
And I mean, if you really want to break it down, that is kind of what they said in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah, and I mean, just depends on how literal you want to be with either the whole Bane thing or even the Rise of Skywalker thing. Like, it's pretty clear that Rey was channeling all the spirits, so that makes sense. That's acceptable in-universe. But without any kind of explanation, Palpatine making the claim, like, I am all the Sith, like, are you literally? Because the Sith don't have Force ghosts in the same way that the Jedi do. Right. They can't transcend death like that. Are you literally like that? Like, are they mirrors, or is Palpatine saying, I am the culmination of every Sith that has come before me? I have their knowledge, I have their power, I am them for all intents and purposes. So it really depends on
all the Sith.
Yeah.
I think he had just seen Endgame one too many times.
Yeah.
When it comes down to it. I like to think. I think the story is better if you think of it from, or maybe Palpatine was the first Sith that learned how to, you know, what's the term, Jonathan, when you jump, like when you jump the bodies.
Oh, it's it's essence transfer.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe he was the first one to learn about essence transfer. Like, give us that book. I think that'd be awesome. You know, or something. That lore.
You know, I like the idea of Bane jumping down through millennia, like a thousand and some change years, but and without knowing what Disney's canon version of all these different Sith Lords are, like, for example, in Legends, there's this story probably, it's a few generations prior to Palpatine, it's probably 100, 150 years prior to the prequel movies, but there's a Sith Lord who ends up getting seduced to the light side. He loses it, and he literally goes insane, but he turns to the light side, and I don't remember what his justification was, but he has this, like, fortress library, because one of the big things with the Sith was maintaining, you know, the dark teachings, getting as much written knowledge, holocrons, ancient tomes, things like that, and curing that. He goes nuts while his apprentice is off-planet. He, like, sends her this of him just battling, talking about turning to the light side. She comes back to the fortress and finds that he's lighting all of the Sith knowledge on fire, like he's trying to destroy a thousand years of accumulated knowledge. She ends up killing him. I just don't know how the essence transfer thing works in situations like that, you know?
Right.
Like, it's tricky.
I mean, yeah. Could you argue that part of the reason that he is seduced to the light side is because maybe... So maybe, like, I'm the most powerful Jedi, let's say, and you're the most powerful Sith.
Actually.
So you die, and you go, you come into my body, my vessel, and so now you're me, I'm you, we're kind of one, but maybe you see Daniel coming down the thing, and you realize, oh my god, like, that dude's way more powerful, I'm gonna jump into him. So, like, maybe I even though you're one, maybe we're still separate enough where you can still make your own decision.
Right.
So you're like, I'm going to jump. And that causes me to, you know, be seduced by the light side. And so it's that kind of situation. And maybe I have no recollection of it. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
I don't,
there's
it's
a,
hard
there's
to explain,
a lot of possibilities
but...
there. Yeah, I get what you're saying, though. So how do you guys think that whole Mace killing Palpatine and then turning, because it's pretty close. Mace Windu is actually the only practitioner of Vapad, which is the name of the style. He's the only practitioner of that subform of Form 7 that basically didn't turn to the dark side at one point or another. Like, he's the only one out of the, like, characters that we know about that was not lost to the dark side. Like, it's super common. And they specifically do not teach it because of that. He is the master of that style. But I think there's a decent chance that had he killed Palpatine, that would have happened. I think that's a pretty realistic what if.
I mean, because it's canonized, correct me if I'm wrong, that he believes he's the chosen one. I don't know if that's
canon. I think that's canon.
But that's one of the big reasons he's got the friction with Anakin and all that, which, side note, Lucasfilm and Star Wars confirmed that Anakin was the chosen one the other day on Hayden Christensen's birthday, but that's nothing we all didn't know, right? Even if
I can definitely see Mace going crazy after he killed Palpatine and, like, turning to Anakin and saying, "You see, Skywalker, I'm the chosen one. I defeated the Sith and brought balance to the Force." And just still has his lightsaber on and, like, turns to Anakin. And maybe Anakin falls at that point, too. Because as far as Anakin's concerned, Padme dying in childbirth, that is going to happen. That is the desperation that is driving him through that movie. And Mace Windu, the man who has constantly scorned him, looked down on him, denied him the rank of master, has just betrayed the core tenets of the Jedi ideology by killing the Chancellor, his friend, his mentor, and the one man that he thinks can help him prevent Padme's death. Anakin loses it at this point. And you have probably a duel that, this is going to be a controversial opinion, a duel that I would say probably rivals, if not outshines, the Obi-Wan and Anakin duel at the end of the movie.
Technically, yes. From a technical aspect,
yes.
Yeah.
The whole Obi-Wan Anakin fight was pure emotion.
It was.
It was the WWE match that you've had the whole year of being built up, and then you finally get the match. That's what that was. From a technical aspect, yes, I think Anakin and Mace Windu would have had one hell of a duel. But the thing is, what kind of awesome score do you put behind that?
I don't even know, man. I don't even know. So,
Cantina music.
I think they fight. Let me just lay out my outcome of this. I think it gets to like a long, drawn-out fight. I think we see sort of an amalgamation of that duel that happened in the Chancellor's Room and also the Yoda-Palpatine duel where they're fighting through the Senate chambers. I think they move out of the Chancellor's office and into the Senate chambers, and there's clones all around trying to stop them shooting at them.
Because they're Jedi clones.
The Chancellor's body. Right. And maybe that's one thing that Palpatine does at the end of it. Like, his dying breath, he says, activate, like, Order 66. Like, so maybe the purge is still happening and all these clones are trying to kill both of them. And they're battling, they're, like, killing clones as they're dueling each other into the Senate chambers, and they have this protracted duel over the Senate on floating platforms. It's super sweet. You know, there's tons of acrobatics. I think
they end up in Mace the Jedi Windu. in the Jedi whatever it's called.
The Jedi Temple?
Yeah, like in the room.
That would be cool.
Imagine an active Senate meeting where Padme's in the audience.
Oh my god.
Yeah, where she's just watching this go down.
Ooh. That I like that.
That would be insane. So do you think they use force lighting? Who uses force lighting? Like, if they both turned into dark Jedi, like,
is it known that it's like something that has to be like practiced? Okay. Sorry, because Rey obviously had no knowledge of it, but does there have to be some inclination to the dark side to have?
Yeah,
I always thought so.
I mean, they both fell. Like, in this situation, they both fall into the dark side. They both just watch Palpatine do it. I would think that at least Mace would be capable of it.
One of them's just like, so if I do my fingers like this, it comes out, right? And then they just both
They take a time out to figure it out. Like, they're
like,
both just
up and away.
Yeah. go.
For anyone that can't see this, which is all of you, we all look like T-Rexes right now with our fingers out. guys, I think I have a new episode idea.
Okay.
I say we go, and I really want to do it for three, obviously. I say we go one by one, and we each write basically our whole movie out, and we present it to each other on the podcast.
That's a good idea.
And then we kind of see... Kind of just, and then we can judge, like, oh, would you prefer what we got or like that person's? Each person.
I like that. Some audience engagement.
We all do the same movie, or we'll do separate movies.
Well, so we'll go one by one. So like, we'll do episode one, two.
Okay.
But we have to build off of what we created. So like, we do episode one first,
okay.
And then I have to make a continuation of like, okay, knowing what my episode one was, this is what my episode two is following episode one.
So like, for example, if you say, which I'm using this example because it popped into my head. If you say during the Anakin and Mace Windu fight, Obi-Wan came in and tried to save him and Mace Windu died. Well, now your whole four is, I mean, basically completely open for interpretation.
This is what I'm seeing. We pan down on the mossy swamps of Naboo. Jar Jar stands heaving over a dead body holding two red blades.
That's not you want to go, my man. You are more than welcome.
I can already see it.
I'm just gonna take the Patton Oswalt like Star Wars Marvel protest from Parks and Rec.
Oh, is that what that's from? I remember seeing that years ago.
Yeah.
That is fantastic.
But yeah, so how do you guys think that duel ends, though? Like,
I guess you'll just have to hear my episode three script to find out.
Yeah.
No, I think Anakin still has to come out on top, because you still, in my opinion, you'll still need Darth Vader for the rest of the movies. The whole saga is built around Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Right. So
I think that would probably happen due to pure happenstance. I think Palpatine is a planner. I mean, as shown by the sequels, he's a man who has just contingency plan after contingency plan. Like there's no way he wouldn't have anticipated himself dying. He was constantly, like I said earlier, talking to Jedi, being around Jedi. Like, at any point in time, someone could have a moment of clarity in the Force and see him for what he was. It was unlikely, sure, he was incredibly powerful, but it could have happened. So I see this playing out as Anakin kills Mace Windu and discover the body. Maybe Anakin turns himself in, and you've come to find out that, you know, Anakin has been listed as his successor, and maybe Palpatine's got, like, as soon as he dies, he's got, like, a dead man switch, which plays this whole hologram of, like, the duel, and Mace Windu just, like, stabbing him. And it shows Anakin in a much better light, and Anakin is looked to as, like, not the Supreme Chancellor, but the Jedi Purge is still happening. Like, he's the man who defended the institution of the Republic from, you know, the Jedi, these assassins, these traitors. And I think the Senate turns to him and says, look, we got to wrap this up. We have to finish the Clone Wars. We have to deal with this Jedi thing. You're now acting in the Chancellor's stead, because that was what he wanted. That was what he stated. Anakin is my successor. If anything happens to him, happens to me, he is the man who can lead the Republic through this trying time. And then from there, everything plays out largely the same. I think the Purge probably happens without Anakin, like, or maybe he shows up late. I don't think he... It's a much more gentle descent into the dark side than it is in the movie. It's him taking incremental steps towards evil instead of jumping in.
And maybe the death of the twins is a huge
big catalyst. Right. And maybe that's something where, instead of... I would even like to see, like, a situation where he beats Obi-Wan. Like, you know, maybe he's going there as the leader of the Republic to Mustafar to finish the Separatists off, and then Obi-Wan and Padme show up, and he just loses his shit. He's like, look, like, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. I watched Mace Windu kill Chancellor Palpatine and betray the Republic, and Obi-Wan doesn't know about this. Padme doesn't know about this at this point. You know, like, they both lose their mind, and maybe that statement alone, this chain of events, is enough to make Obi-Wan falter a little bit in his convictions, which ultimately decides the duel. You know, and the whole time he's just spouting Jedi propaganda, and Anakin's having none of it. Like, how could you even defend the Jedi after what I watched? Like, yeah, right. Maybe he was a Sith Lord, but he was the leader of the Republic, which you claim to serve. Like, he was elected by the people. I don't know how much clearer to make it. And your friend murdered him. Like, and so, in short, he ends up killing Obi-Wan because Obi-Wan gives him no choice. The whole birth thing plays out pretty similar, except for Anakin's present. And, you know, Padme just watched her entire life implode. And that's enough to kill her. And I think that adds a little more weight to the whole, you know, dying from sadness thing.
For sure.
Like, her not being unconscious during the duel would help a lot, watching Anakin and Obi-Wan, like, two of the most important men in her life, fight each other, and Anakin, the father of her children, ultimately killing his mentor and brother. And then from there, you watch Padme die, and that's it for Anakin. He's like, I couldn't protect you, I couldn't protect my mother, I couldn't protect my mentor, but I'm going to protect the Republic. I'm going to make this into... I mean, because he's always had that authoritarian bent. Like, look at the dialogue in 2, where he's like, you know, one person should be in charge of all this. And Padme's like, that sounds a lot like fascism. And he's like, she's like, who's going to be in charge, you? He's like, I don't know, but someone wise, someone smart. And maybe he decides that, like, everyone else is just nuts right now. I need to be in charge. So he reorganizes the Republic into the Empire, and there you go.
You know, I must say you're really, really good at just coming up with shit right off the spot. I do. It's a talent.
It's a talent.
And I love it.
It's a talent.
It's fantastic.
I will say one thing, though. If that ended up happening, that means Anakin does not end up with a mask, which means Kylo is not inspired to wear a mask when he turns.
He might still wear a mask.
Maybe Obi-Wan really takes it to him.
Could be.
You know, or maybe he does it to hide himself.
Like to conceal his identity?
That, I mean, I think more from a hide himself off from the world type thing. But okay. Yes, I think maybe his identity too. Maybe he wants that kind of that figure, that mascot, think, so to say, for the Empire. But he doesn't. It can't be him, right? But so he makes that character.
Yeah, I think Anakin's Empire looks a lot more like him being the supreme autocrat. He's the guy in charge of everything, but he is the guy who sits behind the scenes because he's not a diplomat. He's not a leader in that sense. He's the person that appoints the Council of Moss. I mean, you've got Tarkin, you've got Yularen, you've got all these influential military figures, and those are the people that are ruling the galaxy post-Republic. I think the Senate gets dissolved much earlier, like probably within the next week. I think he's done. Like, it's absolute. Palpatine was a master of subtlety. Anakin has almost none of that.
And you know, as we've seen in the latest episode of The Clone Wars, right? That aired last week.
Yeah, which was incredible.
I am having boatloads of fun talking about this. I know we haven't had really conversations like this in a while, and I'm absolutely loving it. Yeah, I love it. I love all of it. I guess let's leave it at that, and we'll come back to in a future episode. We'll kind of come back to our rewrite scripts, but we'll take a break for now. And then we'll come back and we'll talk the Clone Wars. We'll just go into that.
After the commercials. Who's sponsoring us today?
As of today, according to my hand, it is Internight Pilsner.
Can't show labels, though. Shadow Legends.
Oh, it's Internight Pilsner by Metallica. Balls. It is a beer.
We're sponsored by aluminum.
Aluminum cans. Put anything you want in them.
This episode brought to you by Raid Shadow Legends, the preeminent mobile MMO.
Hey guys, it's Taylor Gray, Ezra Bridger from Star Wars Rebels, and you're listening to the Carbonite Crew Podcast. May the Force be with you, always. Spectre 6, out!
Alright, let's talk some Clone Wars. So, guys, we're in the home stretch of the series. This is it. And, I know we haven't really talked about it too much, the newest season. I've talked to Steven and Shane about it a little bit, but I've just been very, I don't want to say underwhelmed with the season, but very, I guess, just whelmed. I've not been impressed, right? I've not. The episodes, I think the Bad Batch episodes, they were good episodes, but that's not what I wanted, you know, when we started this. And then we got the Ahsoka stuff, and it was a little better. It was Ahsoka in it. It was a little cooler. Man, this newest episode, the start of the finale, this is what I wanted. This is what we were all waiting for, I think. This is what I think we thought the whole season was going to be like, but it's okay. We're here now. And God dang it, it was amazing.
I will disagree with your opinions, actually. Oh, I really like the Bad Batch episodes. I thought those were great. I had a lot of fun watching these new clones and seeing those.
The new droids, too?
Yeah, dude, the droids were cool. I was not a fan of the Martez sisters episodes, just because I feel like nothing happened. Like, it was cool seeing Ahsoka, and it was cool seeing her, like, living a non-Jedi life, but I was about done saying that by the time the first episode was done. Like,
I can respect that opinion. I went into the season expecting a lot of Ahsoka, and then, you know, we don't get Ahsoka until episode, what, 5? Or 4, yeah. Or whatever it was, and yeah. I like the Bad Batch episodes, don't get me wrong. I just think it would have been a really good episodes 10 through 14 in the middle of a whole season. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know.
Like,
a 20 episode long season, you mean, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Or like, and where you can do more with them down the line and introduce them in other arcs.
Right.
I think it's just an expectation thing is really the big thing with me.
Sure. You know?
And
sure.
Because I mean, every trailer they showed you has been from the last 4 episodes. Pretty much, if you go back and watch them.
Pretty much.
Because that's what they're building up to. And that's what I think I liked about the Martez sisters part was we get to see Ahsoka living this non-Jedi life so that when she ignites those lightsabers again in the newest episode, like, it's like Tony Stark not wearing the Iron Man armor for a little while or Spider-Man not having his powers for a little while, right?
Hanging up the webs.
And then all of a sudden, he's got him back. He's got his powers back. He's got the suit back. I mean, and it's like, yes. This is what I want.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I get that. And I didn't hate the Martez sisters episodes. I just felt like there didn't need to be 4 of them. Like, it would have been just fine with 2. Like, maybe instead of all this buildup in the first episode, as Ahsoka's bike fails, she falls onto their ship that's leaving the planet. She's able to get into the ship right as they break, like, right before it would kill her. And they're off to do their spice run. You get, like, the whole first cut of the episode. They drop the spice. And then the second episode is just them being imprisoned and dealing with the pikes. Like, it doesn't need to be 4 episodes.
I can agree with that. I will agree with you on that.
I think the episodes, like, in the middle basically made me acknowledge how hard it was for Ahsoka. Like, not just the not having her lightsabers, the not being able to use her powers in public. Like, they did add some of that, like, you know, she has shame because of all what the Jedi have done that, like, they're not noticing is bad. But, I mean, it also kind of made me, like, notice the, shoot, what was it? I just lost my train of thought. I would say the loneliness more than anything. Like, she's without Anakin, who was, like, her best friend, her mentor.
Her brother.
Yeah. She literally says in one of the episodes her brother taught her.
So I guess 4 episodes of that really drove that point home, and that was nice. But at the same time, it was like, okay, we get it. She's on her own. And at one point, I'm just kind of like, man, these characters are just not going to play a large role at all. And I don't know why we're focusing so much on these characters that seem to be making so many mistakes and are contradicting each other, and there's so much indecision between them. I don't know. It made me, like, almost dislike the characters.
Oh yeah, I definitely dislike the characters.
Do you think, you know, you said you think it could all be summed up in 2 episodes. Would you stand behind that same thought process if it's a 22 episode season versus a 12 episode season?
No.
Or would you?
No, I don't. I think what I would do in that case is kind of break it up. I know they rarely do this, especially with big arcs like this, but I would have, if you've got a 22-episode season, you do some introductory stuff. Maybe you have some Anakin and Obi-Wan fighting in the Outer Rim, you know? And then you cut to Ahsoka, you do those first 2 episodes, they're off to deal with the pikes, maybe they even dump the spice, you get this big cliffhanger, and you drop the arc for a little while. You go and do some other things, have some Bad Batch, and then, boom. Conclusion, finale, that leads right into the Mandalore stuff. And to pick up on what you were saying, I know there's enough content that they had begun to mess with for the end of the Clone Wars that they could have done a 22-episode season pretty easily. You've got Dark Disciple, for example, which is a whole Quinlan Vos being sent to basically assassinate Count Dooku, which would really highlight how far the Jedi Council has fallen. Like, the fact that Yoda and Mace Windu and Obi-Wan would sanction the assassination of Count Dooku and use a fellow Jedi who could and does in the book fall to the dark side to do it, that would be incredible to see.
Yeah, it actually would have been really good.
I think we could have even gotten back and get some animated Qui-Gon Jinn.
Ooh. Yeah. Yeah, I'd be into that. That'd be
amazing.
Get a little bit of Master and Apprentice in there. Just a few little splashes.
Some flashbacks, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, you've got the whole... I know I talk, I bring it up now and then. I do really like the book. You've got the whole Labyrinth of Evil thing. And you could have that be an arc right before this Mandalore arc where, you know, you could actually get to see the Siege of Coruscant starting to happen and the clones and the Jedi figuring out, oh shit, the Sith Lord is here on Coruscant. We have an idea about where he usually goes. Let's go check this out. You know, and then you get this moment of you actually get to see Palpatine like get in contact with Grievous and Dooku and say, I need you to come to Coruscant, make one push and, you know, take the Chancellor. The time is now.
Speaking of Grievous, I'll always vouch for Grievous whenever he comes up in conversation. How did you guys feel about the very slight animation tweak?
He looked amazing.
I liked it.
He looked scary.
I haven't found a problem with any of the animation in this season. It's all been great. I mean, one of the little things is just how expressive the characters are. Like, go back and watch Anakin on that bridge when he's surrendering. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And just watch how expressive he is. Like, it's not just a voice acting thing. Like, he's genuflecting and, you know,
right.
He's really trying to sell it. And the best part is you can tell that he's acting, and he's acting badly in-universe. Like, if you were there, you'd be rolling your eyes because it's just such a stupid plan. And he's not doing it well. It's not like Anakin's very good at deception. But it was great. I was just blown away by how expressive they made him.
Which, and it's amazing. I saw a meme someone pointed out where, was it, he does a false surrender, which is actually an illegal act of war.
It is,
I believe,
absolutely,
according
is.
To the Geneva Convention, if I'm correct, or I could be completely wrong.
Yep. Like... Nope, you're absolutely correct, yeah. You can't do that. It is a war crime.
It is a war crime, but it's fantastic. Oh, man. I absolutely loved this episode. I thought it built the part where... okay, this is a good conversation starter. When Ahsoka realizes the Pikes are working with Maul, which is actually, I think, the previous episode, mm-hmm. right? They're working with Maul, and he kind of turns to, like, look down. Do you mm-hmm. think he sees her out the corner of his eye, or do you think he feels her in the Force?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Do you? Okay. Because, I mean, I feel like she directly, like, looks right at him. From her, like, the point of view we get from her. And
I talked about it, and I was like, hold on a minute. How do holo transmissions work?
The way he turns is super weird.
I know that, like, Maul in Solo did the whole lightsaber thing, which was obviously something not necessary. But then here, he, like, it seems like he's Force sensitive from wherever he's calling from. And he can sense that something's in the room. It doesn't seem to me like he sees something in the corner of his eye. It seems like something he's sensing in the room.
I think that makes the most sense, too, because how often... Okay, so, like, let's say Maul saw her out the corner of his eye and he turned to look. Why does he have this big view of the room when they only have a view of him?
Yeah.
Shouldn't they have a view of his room?
I thought it worked both ways. Like, right. You basically see the one that's talking. Because, like, when you hail a ship, like, for some reason... You can, like, still have, like, a side conversation with your co-pilot and not have it be heard sometimes.
Right.
Like, hey, we're going to infiltrate this rebel base. Oh, yeah, everything's fine here. We're just regular people.
Exactly. So I don't – and that's why it doesn't make sense that I think he saw her.
Right.
Or that he even turns his whole body and he's just at the railing. That was weird to me, too.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, he can just walk around. He's in his own little VR. Like, it was weird to
right.
me.
So one thing I want to bring up while I'm still thinking about it, that whole end of that episode with Maul and the Pikes, it didn't overtly do a lot, but it actually really fleshed out Crimson Dawn and what Crimson Dawn is. Because
I would say that too, yeah.
Sort of one of the things that I had always assumed after seeing Solo, that after the Shadow Collective falls apart, which is his whole alliance with all the underworld groups and with the Mandalorians, once that falls apart, I always assumed that Crimson Dawn was the successor organization to that, specifically focusing mainly on, you know, illicit trading goods, things like that. But apparently Crimson Dawn has just been around, and it leaves me with a lot more questions than answers. Is Crimson Dawn an organization that existed prior to Maul, or was it one that he established when he took over the Shadow Collective?
I think Maul's very similar to a Palpatine in a sense of planning. I think Maul is a planner, and it was one of those things where, in my opinion, I think it was his organization, but he kind of had his hands everywhere else. I think he kind of wanted to control. I think he had the same mindset as Palpatine in a way of, I want to rule the whole galaxy.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely just kind of a holdover from him being Palpatine's assassin, really. I think the big difference between Maul and Palpatine is that, A, Maul is nowhere as smart as Palpatine is.
Right.
Not by far. Secondly, he's focused on that one goal. I mean, it's like they said at Celebration, it's Sisyphus rolling the boulder up the hill again and again and again. Kill Kenobi. Kill Kenobi. Kill Kenobi. That's the only thing he's focused on.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, like, what's the timeline on how long he was under Palpatine's service or in Palpatine's service?
I believe he was taken from his home at the age of 5. We don't have a canon timeline for it, but canon hasn't contradicted legends in this point.
You know, I'm going to really associate this with the real world. Here for a minute and really date our podcast if the COVID-19 already hasn't, and just say that I think Maul is very much like a Joe Exotic, and that his whole goal is to kill Maul as Joe Exotic was to kill Carol Baskin, and that he would do anything to try to get as much control as he could and take power wherever, even if it was these side things like running Crimson Dawn or running the Pikes or running Mandalore, so that he could really gain that power to have control of everybody and really do his dirty work, just like Joe Exotic trying to run for governor or even president, so that in the end he would have ultimate power and be able to do his dirty work, which was kill Kenobi / Carol Baskin.
Since I completely get that reference, being one out of apparently
four people have only seen it. Statistically proven, only four people have not seen.
I was gonna say, you know, it seems like some of that Palpatine-ness would rub off on him, like if you spent that much time with him. But at the same time, like it's kind of like, I think Clone Wars makes a point of it that male Zabraks were very dominated, I guess, or subservient race.
Yeah, like, very much so.
Made to serve another master, or made to serve a higher purpose than what they are, besides being warriors.
Well, and I think Maul is a great example of an atypical Zabrak. Like, he is, I mean, if you compare him to Savage, especially, I mean, look, you've got Savage, you've got this massive hulking, I would never want to meet Savage, even in broad daylight on the street, let alone in a back alley at night. Like, he is not a guy you want to mess with. And the first time that he meets Maul and says, I'm in charge, Maul puts him right in his place. And it's done. Like, Maul is like, no, you're nothing. You know, and I think Maul is a great example of what a typical Zabrak male is not. He does have that cunning, but again, it's focused in such a way that it doesn't do him any favors overall. I mean, Maul, I'm convinced that Maul would get into a ship packed with explosives if he knew that by killing himself, he could also kill Kenobi, without a doubt. he would go to any lengths to get rid of Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I can see that, because like we obviously see how crazy he goes. Like he just loses it. He becomes,
he's nuts.
Not even something with a soul. He's just like empty. He's just an animal for way too long, and then he ends up like finding himself back through the Night Sisters.
Those of us who have read Ahsoka kind of know how this duel plays out, but if I hadn't, I would be very dubious about Ahsoka's chances in all of this.
The thing, I don't think it's going to follow the book very well, though, to be honest with you.
No?
I really don't think it's going to do much for the book, because I'm pretty sure the book itself says that she has the green lightsabers in the duel.
Well, I mean, I know little it's detail, sure, change, and I think the show does supersede the canon of the book, and I think I already saw someone on Twitter talking about that, but I don't think they're going to change the major events. I mean, obviously, Ahsoka has to live. Obviously, Maul has to live. It's not going to be a duel to the death, but if I didn't know that, if I didn't have that meta knowledge, this would be a really scary cliffhanger. Like,
and who? What is going to happen, right?
Right.
Like, I think we are in this perfect position, as we kind of know, obviously, the big points. Ahsoka lives, Maul lives, blah, blah, blah. But we don't know really what's going to happen.
I bet Anakin dies in this episode, though. I don't know. Clearly. He might. Loses a limb.
Ooh. Maybe one we didn't know about.
Whoa.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. That's not what I meant, but if that's where we're going.
Are you sure?
All right. Yeah, someone's got Joe Exotic on their mind, and it's not this guy. No, but like maybe something happens, because I was talking to Steven about this the other day, where Captain Rex and the 501st are with Ahsoka, if I've been paying attention correctly.
Right.
But the 501st do have to get back to Coruscant, because they've confirmed, right, that that is the 501st with Anakin marching into the temple.
Correct.
So how did they get back? How does Rex get away? Is that what stops the duel? Order 66? Do the clones think that Maul is a Jedi too, and that's what stops the duel? I don't know what's going to happen.
It's a good question. Yeah, there's a lot of unknowns.
Because that's about to happen in like the next 5 minutes, guys. Order 66 in this show, like at any moment. And maybe we're going to learn whether Revenge of the Sith was 3 weeks or 2 days.
Yeah, I think we'll get some answers. I definitely do.
Does Anakin go back for the 501st? Does Palpatine send a transmission to that squadron, being like, you need to go back to Coruscant. Lord Vader needs your help. I don't know. It'd be cool. I think it'd be cool if we somehow saw an introduction of like stormtroopers at the end of like the Clone Wars. I think it'd be a really nice bookend to this. Like, we went from clones to stormtroopers. And we see maybe the beginning of those of that uniform change to really drive home like the Empire. Like if Palpatine really did have this planned out all that time, you know, maybe one of his things where we're gonna have obviously different uniforms, one of those things.
Right.
So I don't know.
That makes sense.
I think there's a lot that can happen in the next 3 episodes.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it.
Which, and I don't know if you guys noticed, but this episode was like 28 minutes or 30 minutes. It was like 7 minutes longer.
Really?
It was seven minutes longer. And if they do that every episode, that's a whole extra episode we're getting. And I know I brought it up on the Instagram the other day, but I think they should have released this as a movie. And I know with the circumstances now, they can't. But
right.
I mean, they started the series with a movie, end it with a movie. 4 parts, half hour each, 2 hour movie. Perfect.
Hashtag seven seasons and a movie.
Hashtag save season 7 of the Clone Wars. Hashtag theatrical release.
7 seasons and 2 movies.
Hashtag save Clone Wars. Look, type it now. I bet we can get it trending.
Hashtag Clone Wars Trevorrow release.
Hashtag Ahsoka lives.
Give me the Lucas release. Cut.
Yeah.
The Lucas.
Hashtag Lucas cut.
I don't know if Clone Wars is pretty fleshed out. Talking about Lucas, are you ready to talk some Mando yet?
Mando.
Do the magic can thing.
Speaking of, did you guys see that video with the hairbrush? The makeup brush with all the girls?
Makeup brush?
So, like, they started out, like, normal. Like, you're looking at me, and, like, they would have a makeup brush, and they would be, like, they'd wipe their face like the makeup brush, and then they'd wipe the camera like that, and then they would come off, and they would be, like, cosplayed as, like, a Star Wars character.
Yeah, yeah, I saw
that. And then they would, like, drop it or throw it, and the next person would, like, catch it, and then, like, look at it and do the same thing, and it was just different. It was pretty cool. All right. The sun is still not down. It's still light outside. It's 8:30. So, guys, Mando. I actually started rewatching season one last week.
Dude.
And it's amazing.
Stop. Get out of my head. I literally was like, I need to finish it again.
Dude, yeah. I was like, I couldn't find something to watch, and I was on Disney Plus. I said, man, Mando looks good. And it's even better the second time so far.
Is it?
I haven't had a chance to rewatch, but I think I told you guys, like, I watched one and two because, like, two friends hadn't watched or didn't have Disney Plus.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, rewatching them a second time was cool, but I didn't even finish it all the way through.
Yeah, I think I don't know, like, I was very more in tune with, like, the music and scoring of the first episode again on my second viewing, and it was just so cool. It just, I don't know. It was so
I'm just ready to see all the fight scenes again. Like, how well choreographed all those fight scenes are.
They're incredible.
Like, pulling the dude through the doorway and then blasting it shut, and it just snips that guy in half.
Oh, it was amazing.
Hits that guy with a fresh mug of whatever Bantha beer they're drinking. Oh. Sorry, Jawa juice, as I usually order. Jawa juice. Knows my usual order when I'm out drinking.
Either that or Corellian blood ale.
You want a cup of Jawa juice?
Not from you, lady. Guys, we need to do another episode where we just voice people again.
I'm just so blown away by that show in general.
Got him.
I really appreciated how much Mandalorian recontextualized a lot of the things that we see in Star Wars. It's a much more focused show to the point where I hadn't really thought beforehand. Okay, so, like, I'll just give you a concrete example. AT-STs. We saw them in Return of the Jedi, and they're treated as a joke. Like, they're powerful, especially, I mean, it's kind of the trope where they're pretty much useless in the hands of the bad guys, but Chewbacca gets in one, and things are just going really well. It's all very heroic and tropey, as you would expect from, like, a mainline Star Wars episodic movie. But then you get to, I think it's episode 3, episode 4?
4, I think.
I think it's, okay.
I want to say 4.
You get to that point, and you've got a hardened Mandalorian bounty hunter, and you've got an ex-Rebel Special Forces drop trooper. And between the two of them, they literally sit there and say, there's nothing on this planet that can actually damage this thing. And it's terrifying. Like, the fact that it's got, like, this red light emanating from it, it really made me rethink a lot of the things. Like, if you weren't watching the original Star Wars movies with the eye of, like, this is a fun sci-fi John thing where generally speaking, the good guys win and the bad guys lose. The Empire is terrifying. Like, if that's an AT-ST, think about, like, what going up against an AT-AT would be like.
That leads me, because I just watched, we played Star Wars Monopoly and watched Rogue One and got super wasted, but watching Rogue One where he rocket launches that AT-AT in the face, and it just, like, turns, and it's like, no, you didn't. And it's just, like, gets the blasters ready. Yeah, exactly. Man, I think about the AT-ATs, and I'm, like, thinking back to, like, Jedi Fallen Order, like, how you had to climb up those things, and they're, like, so insanely, like, intricate. Like, just climbing up those, they're massive things that just walk through water, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, it's little stuff like that that you wouldn't normally think of in that context, and that's one of the things I really appreciate about The Mandalorian. And you've got these small-scale things, which, like, if you look at The Mandalorian in the context of the scope of other Star Wars movies and TV shows, I mean, a great example is just The Clone Wars. You've got this galaxy-sweeping conflict with all these intricate little moving parts and people and characters, and, like, you've got a former Sith Lord taking over an entire planet with a crime syndicate and using that as bait to pull the person he wants to kill out of hiding. And then compare that to, well, we've got to make money, so let's go break into a New Republic prison ship. And that shouldn't work. Like, if you're comparing scope, The Mandalorian should seem very small scale and very boring, really. I mean, like, you go to Tatooine and there's a guy who wants to be a bounty hunter and he wants to track down this bounty. And so they do it and he ends up betraying the Mandalorian. Mando wins. Like, if you compare that to other just synopses of episodes, that should just be boring. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, it should be nothing. It should be like, oh, well, yeah, this is Star Wars, so that's great, but really, like, what's here? But the way that they crafted that show and the magic that they put into it invalidates that completely. Like, and it's just incredible to watch it happen because, like, I haven't done a rewatch yet. I haven't started one. I probably will soon, honestly. But, you know, just watching it the first time, I'm just like, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? And it's so well made.
We should stream all three of us rewatching it.
It's a beautifully done show, and I agree with you completely. I never thought about it like that. You know, it should be boring, but it's not.
Or at least off of the... maybe not boring, but not as riveting as it is.
I was going to go off the thing that you said. Like, it seems like it'd be boring, but so episode one touches, like, really briefly on the whole, like, you know, money only works on me. Credits won't do fine. And then, like, in episode one, there's just, like, a little intricacy in Mando that's just like, well, what's going to happen now? The Republic doesn't – or the Empire doesn't exist anymore. How are you going to pay me? Oh, here's some calamari flan. And I'm like, whoa, dude, there's calamari flan too? Like, how do, like, economies work? How do you spread – like, Republic credits all through the galaxy to the point where, like, there wouldn't be, like, inflation. And this is just me. This is where I'm like, this is boring, but I'm like, this is actually really cool to think about. Like, how do you avoid, like, oversaturating markets on different, like, systems with, like, too much money on one system? Like, why isn't Coruscant, like, crazily inflated? And why isn't their infrastructure, like, insane? I don't know. That's just the little thing that I think about.
Well, like, to answer your question, because I've had that same train of thought. I don't know that we've talked about this, but, like, that's a big point for a lot of just regular Joe Schmoes who are Imperial Remnant people and Imperial. If you're not – assuming you're not a mustache-twirling villain like Moff Gideon or, you know, the client, like, if you're talking about just, like, a rank-and-file Imperial, someone who does support the Empire, like, there is a lot of security and infrastructural benefits to a large organization, even if it's evil and, you know, a fascist organization, because you have things like the regulation of the economy. Like, it's an absolute mess out there. Like, this is 5 years after. Like, the New Republic is a thing, but it's barely a thing. It's a newborn. Like, they don't have control of currencies, and one of the big, like, struggles the New Republic fought with, especially during its formative eras, and this is touched on in the Leia Bloodlines novel a little bit, because there's that whole prologue chapter that's talking about sort of the formation of the Senate and how they have things set up, and it's also touched on a little bit in Aftermath, the Aftermath trilogy, but there are basically two big groups in the New Republic Senate. And I don't remember their names, but there's a group who wants to bring back the Republic in the sense of the Republic before the Clone Wars, before it fell, where you've got this big central government, you've got all these overriding interests, you've got corporate corruption, you've got – it's everywhere. And then you have the group like Mon Mothma and Leia where you know you let systems kind of have their own freedom. You let them kind of do their own thing. But that in and of itself is inherent chaos, especially economically, because you might have an overriding currency. You might have New Republic credits, but your New Republic credits are also competing with Imperial credits. They're competing with local currencies like calamari flan. They're competing with traded goods like, for example, Beskar. You know, in order to I mean, creating a galactic economy, especially during all this conflict and in lieu of, I mean, 40 years of nonstop conflict, that is just a whole nother thing. I mean, and this is a very boring conversation, but yeah, I think it's interesting.
Like, I was just imagining, like, halfway through that, I was like, do you imagine, like, someone's just like, so why are you into, like, why are you marrying Jesse? Oh, he's in the Empire. He's got dental, so that's why I'm marrying into this family.
Yeah,
like, can you imagine
now,
the Empire's dental plan and
sure,
their vision?
I'm sure that happened. I'm absolutely sure. I mean, what are your options? Like, you live in a backwater? I mean, and if you look back to New Hope, even Luke wants to go to the Imperial Flight Academy because it's his ticket out of there.
Yeah.
You know, it's a way to make something of your life and have those benefits. It's the same reason, not comparing the Empire to the American, you know, military, but it's the same reason that a lot of people join up in the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, you know.
It's a way,
These are ways to advance your life and set your goal and get through college and learn a skill. I mean, it's the same thing, really.
I would say, like, Tyler, is there anything, I don't know if, like, a specific episode or from episode one of Mando that, like, was, like, little, but you were, like, wow, they really, like, delved into this when they, like, didn't necessarily have to, or it was just really cool how they did it.
I mean,
back tubes.
Not...
Dang it, I forgot about that.
I mean, I guess my big one when, of my first viewing, at least, was... not to your extent, but was the Imperial credits thing was, you know, there's this currency and there's this exchange that it doesn't mean anything. And there's, I guess it just, it felt more real like today with the currencies that are exchanged in the world today, or even, you know, they touch on the carbonite a little bit, how, you know, it was the prototype in Empire Strikes Back, but now we're what, 13, 15 years later. And that's the normal way of doing business in his line of work.
Mm-hmm.
He's utilizing this technology that was advanced from years mm-hmm. prior. And I mean, nothing to the extent that you said with the calamari flan as you brought up, which I always think about you when I see that scene.
Like, I did watch that scene where he pushes him into like the freezing chamber and like, you know, the blasts of air come down on his arm, and yet he's not, his arm isn't carbonite frozen. Like, they've perfected it so much that, like, you can just push up a bounty up against that wall, push a button, and boom, you got yourself a free popsicle that you get to exchange for money.
Ice cream man's coming around. Hear that? Maybe I can insert a.
So,
ice cream truck there.
I don't think they're allowed out right now.
They should be one of the few things that are
out. About, I know we've been talking about season one a lot, but I wanted to ask, what are you guys expecting from season two? What would you like to see?
After seeing season one, I'm expecting the same thing that we got, and when I say that, I mean I have no idea. I didn't know what to expect with season one, and I was happily overwhelmed with what we got.
We know one thing to expect.
Baby,
that's
Yoda.
True.
We know Rosario Dawson.
See, but that's not confirmed. Let's touch on that, because
yeah,
as a podcast, we've not talked about that at all. And as friends, I don't think we've really talked about it either. I think Daniel and I brought it up at one point for like 2 seconds, but
yeah,
I don't know.
It
seems
so
all but confirmed.
For those of you that have no idea what we're talking about,
which would be crazy,
there was a report a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago now at this point, released saying that Rosario Dawson has been cast as Ahsoka Tano in season two of The Mandalorian.
Fantastic actress, Daredevil.
Yeah, great actress.
Yes.
There were a couple little. There's a lot of things here to unpack, the first of which being, whoa, Ahsoka's going to be in The Mandalorian. Secondly, and this was my initial reaction, wait, that's not actually Eckstein.
Okay, what is everyone's thoughts on Rosario Dawson? Let's just get that. Let's start there.
I'm good with it. You know, after thinking about it and being a little bit disappointed that it's not Ashley, you know, Rosario is a great actress. I think she's going to do a great job. I can definitely see her as Ahsoka. Like, that's a pretty easy mental image for me to summon. I'm overall pretty happy with it.
Daniel?
I think, same agreement. She was really great in like all of the things that I've seen her. She hasn't had like very many major roles that I've seen her in, but this is obviously going to be like a big step up. This is the Star Wars universe. It's on Disney's only and novel streaming platform. I think she is going to do well, but there's just something that is going to fall short of our expectations just because we're so used to Ahsoka Tano from the Clone Wars series and Ahsoka Tano from Rebels. Mm-hmm. That it's just gonna like I'm not saying it's I want it to. I'm saying that there's something that's going to let us down just a little bit. We're gonna be like, oh man, why isn't she wielding the Shoto blade as well? Or why isn't she still have I don't know something like
why is her stance not like that? Why is her foot not 90 degrees more to the right?
Why is her hair not as pointy as it was before? I don't know. There's just gonna be something that I feel like we're so used to one aspect of her that it's just gonna let us down. Nothing against her. I know that I've seen her do, but I just feel like Disney's gonna try and Jon Favreau and Filoni are gonna try really hard to get it to like a point where we'll appreciate it. But it's going to be tough because we're so used to Ahsoka standard.
I 100% agree. When I first heard it, it's not that I was disappointed, but I think I'm right exactly with you, and I think you said it perfectly. I feel like I'm going to be let down, and maybe that's why I'm worried. And it has nothing to do with her. Like, I agree with what you said. Everything I've seen her in is great. There was a show on TNT this past season that came out. It was like an 8-part miniseries. It looked amazing that she was in. I want to watch it. But I agree. I think there's something. And I think the big thing for me, as Jonathan pointed out, was it's not Ashley Eckstein. You know, I've seen her cosplay as Ahsoka, and I think it's that voice, you know, for me, really, overall. I think it's Ashley Eckstein's voice overall. I really do. And I would love to see a Darth Maul scenario where Sam Witwer voices Darth Maul in Solo. Or there was another actor that voiced Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace. It can be done. And I fear, you know, maybe that's just logistically too hard to do because maybe she's going to have so many lines. That's just so much time in the editing room. You know, voicing up. Syncing up, you know, Rosario's acting with Ashley's acting, and which I get it, but this and at the same time, you know, Ashley had said on a live stream recently after the news, quote unquote, broke, even though it's still not confirmed. Let me make that very, very clear. This has not broke as official breaking news from anyone in Disney, Lucasfilm, anything like that. But you know, Ashley Eckstein says, you know, she didn't know about this. You know, she has no knowledge of what's going on, which is really disappointing as a Star Wars fan. And I know, especially for us three who absolutely love everything Ashley has done in this universe.
Yeah.
And everything she's contributed outside of the show itself, just with fandom and geekdom and everything you want to say. It's fantastic. And I thank her so much. But maybe she's pulling the Disney NDA. You know, maybe she's one of the big ones right now with Mando Season 2 where, hey, here's this non-disclosure agreement. You don't get to say a word. And if it gets brought up, you lie your ass off. You know, and maybe that was one of the things they said to her, like, you know, hey, you know, we're not going to confirm this Ahsoka thing because it's too big a news to confirm, so we're not going to, which I think is smart. If she is in it, I don't want to see an official confirmation. I just don't. And they told her,
I want to see a tease of it in. I want to see a tease of it in the trailer. That's what I want to see. And I want to see like just a cut shot of like maybe the Mando and the child walking into like a room or something, a hut, I don't know. And like you just see her in her like Gandalf outfit with the staff, and you just kind of turn and you get like the first little like
the owl.
The first little yeah. You just see the owl. You don't even need to see her, like.
Or maybe you just see the owl in the trailer. Like maybe they stumble across the cave and there's an owl in there. Like that owl. I can't remember its name.
So let's say also imagine that like Mando and the child are walking into some tavern or canteen or whatever, and you just see like a hooded figure at the bar, and there's like two holes cut out at the top of the hood, and there's just like little Ahsoka. I keep wanting to call him Leku because I'm so used to thinking of Twi'leks, but like her hair is like popping out of the two little like holes at the or the openings at the top, basically.
I don't think they should do anything like that. I think with this leak, whatever you want to call it, I think they need to go back and re-edit it and make her not show up until the last episode. Keep us on the edge of our toes. The whole season.
I just have so many questions. If she's actually going to be in this, like, we left her whole arc on like a cliffhanger. Like, is Sabine going to be in it? Because I mean, Ahsoka and Sabine went off to look for Ezra. Have they found Ezra? Like, I know we've talked about it, but is Ahsoka like working with Luke Skywalker? Is that a thing we'd see?
Is finding Ezra gonna be like a Fallen Order thing, where you kind of end up in the same place where you start at the beginning? Kind of like I know we talked about this in the tabletop group a little bit, but like, you know, the beginning and end of it, you kind of end on the same note. There's not really a big change. Is it kind of gonna end like that?
Right. Yeah, and I don't know. I know we haven't talked about this either, but I know I'd seen some rather unsubstantiated rumors that they were going to do a Rebels sequel series as well.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that with Sabine and Ahsoka. And is that the lead-in for that?
I could see it, yeah. I mean, especially with... It seems like Disney was pretty quick to like cut the cord on Resistance. I haven't watched Resistance Season 2 yet, but to me, it seems like they're trying to distance themselves from the sequel trilogy.
Which they should.
Yeah, I think they're definitely going to take a step back and say, okay, this is a thing we did, this is a thing that happened, but let's go look at some stories. Because... So, I mean, if you look at it like... They're doing the whole High Republic thing. Like, that is as far within canon as you can get from the sequel trilogy, really.
You can do these side stories within the Skywalker saga universe, whatever you want to call it, that has nothing to do with the Skywalkers.
Right.
Which, and I think it's a lovely plan. Rebels, amazing. How much Skywalker in there was there? Darth Vader, yeah, but not much. You know?
Well, and those are the big things. It's kind of like, and I think Disney does do this really well. It's they focus on these smaller scale stories, and you know, you really get you have to eat your peas and carrots before you have your cake. Like, you've got Darth Vader popping up every now and then. You have Ahsoka showing up. You've got the world between worlds. You've got these big moments, but you usually have one or two of them a season. Yeah. And I think that works really well for the animated shows.
Because it means that much more.
It does. Because it does. You know, and that's why I would agree with you. I really think if they're gonna do Ahsoka, it should be a short thing, and it should be a one time thing. Ahsoka Tano should not be a quest giver that they show up in the first episode and she gives them her whole life story and, oh, this is why I'm here and this is what happened with Ezra and this and this and this.
I don't want
to
hear any
of that.
Oh,
by the way, I need you to go off and do this thing, like come back to me later. Like, no, it needs to be short, it needs to be impactful, and it needs to be punchy.
Exactly. Exactly. I can't say it any better than that.
Well, and I mean, just to be a little negative here for a minute, like, one of the biggest criticisms that we've seen from Rise of Skywalker and the sequel trilogy in general is just how a lot of fans feel like, and I'm not saying this is my viewpoint, but I've heard this, and I do feel this way a little bit with TROS, but, like, they feel like Disney's taken this thing and they've just milked it. They've used it, and they say, oh, I don't care if this makes, we're going to make this movie, we're going to do this movie because we just spent $4 billion on it. Doesn't matter if we have any planning. It doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense that, you know, all the Jedi and all the Sith. It doesn't matter, you know, it doesn't matter that she's Rey Skywalker. I just, all this stuff, and a lot of people feel that way, and I think Disney needs to be very careful with how they treat fan favorites right now.
I kind of thought about that when we mentioned that. I know we haven't touched it yet, but we're going to talk a little bit about the Disney Gallery Mandalorian mm-hmm. special. So, like, I know that we're all, you know, hyped up for Mando Season 2. We're all waiting for what's going to happen next with the child, obviously. But right now, you know, Disney came out with their streaming service, what, 4 months before, you know, everything kind of just went topsy-turvy. And mm-hmm. streaming services are just, like, earning revenue like nobody's business right now. So, like, yeah, it was a good time to put out a streaming service. And it's really good for Disney in that aspect, because I know a lot of people, as soon as they watched Mando Season 1, they kind of dropped their subscription. Like, that was almost like a thing for a lot of people. So, like, now they're kind of putting out – I think I do appreciate a Mando Gallery special. Like, that's cool. But at the same time, like, I feel like that's another way to just milk the series a little bit more when we have to wait for – all the editing and production to end on Season 2. And then they're already talking about Season 3 being in the works, because that seems to be one of the main things that's keeping Star Wars fans on Disney Plus.
Right. Well, I mean, they have to do something to build goodwill. And I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, yeah, I'd rather have some new content. I'd rather, whether it be like more TV shows, like another season of Rebels announced, or another season of Clone Wars announced, or, you know, a TV special, especially one that seems as, again, just playing devil's advocate here, coming at this from the view of someone who's been disappointed just immensely with the sequel trilogy. Like, it feels very self-congratulatory. Like, mm-hmm. go back and watch the special features on the Episode 8 DVD, mm-hmm. Blu-ray, mm-hmm. and go watch how much they talk about how amazing Rian Johnson is and how this story is the best Star Wars movie ever made and all this stuff. And you get this very cognitive dissonance, and it's like, yeah, you know, it's great that Kathleen Kennedy is patting Rian Johnson on the back, but can we just have Star Wars here? Like, save that for the Oscars. It's cool that we're going to get some behind-the-scenes footage, and I'm going to watch it for that, but, like, I need you to fix the franchise. I don't need to hear about how great you are. You know, and Mando is great, and so I'm a little bit less bitter, like, if they would have come out with a special, like, only on Disney Plus, the making of the sequel trilogy. Like, I'd be pissed about that. Like, I'm more okay with this. But still. Well,
from what I'm unraveling about this whole, the making of, is it's called Disney Gallery Star Wars The Mandalorian. Is my guess is we're going to get Disney Gallery as, like, a special, which is going to be a behind-the-scenes look at a lot of other things. And this is probably just the first one. You know, we'll probably get something like, oh, The Lady and the Tramp. You know, down the line, or the new Lizzie McGuire series, stuff like that.
Right.
You know, I think it's going to be a good special. I think we're going to see a lot of cool behind the scenes things. And that's the thing with The Mandalorian is, I kind of meant to touch on this a second ago, was I know you were more excited about it than I was. And, you know, I know when we were at Celebration last April in Chicago, you know, they had the Mandalorian panel and stuff. There was nothing about it that excited me. You know, to me, cool, new Star Wars, I'm 110% for it. Down. I was more excited for the video game announcement, and I don't play video games, than this new TV show. But my expectations were blown out of the water. I think they were kind of the same way. I think they were like, cool, new Star Wars we're going to give people, right on the cusp of The Rise of Skywalker, and then bam. And you know, maybe, not that The Rise of Skywalker was a failure by any means. I think it was a good movie. And we will talk about this another time. I think the only reason it gets as much flack as it is because of Episode 8 itself. I think Episode 8 ruined a lot of things. But, you know, you released The Mandalorian, this amazing TV show, right before this movie, and it's reminding people why they fell in love with Star Wars, and that's what they want. They want that now. You know? And I really have no idea where this conversation is going at this point. I think we're all just kind of throwing out, like... weird points, but...
Well, I mean, and let me just cut in, because, like, again, my biggest point is that Disney needs to build some goodwill. After 8, after 9, you know, they've been doing some things right. Fallen Order was great. I don't know how much success I would attribute it to them versus the actual development studio, but whatever. I mean, right. Mando blew it out of the water. This season of Clone Wars has been good, so it's certainly not like they're just failing in every respect. Right. However, when you look at, I think there's a big disconnect between their side projects, like The Mandalorian and the video game, and comparing that to the pressure that it takes to make a large-scale movie, I think there's a lot more corporate meddling when you look at movie production, especially the view. You know, I think it's kind of the same thing you see it at most companies. You know, you've got some really dedicated people in the ground floor and in middle management who run the company, and then you have these people who their job is the bottom line, and they come in with these ideas, which sometimes they work, a lot of times they don't, and they really push for, this is what the new Star Wars is going to be. This is how we're going to do it. Well, the last movie didn't work because it was too new, so we're going to bring back Palpatine. We're going to do all this stuff. You know, Luke's going to say he was wrong. It's going to be great. Like, Rey Skywalker. I mean, it's the same thing. It's like, I don't know if you've heard the story about some of the Lucas-era pitch things. I mean, Lucas was great. He made the franchise. But towards the end especially, like, the dude got kind of crazy.
He is God, but not without his flaws. You know,
absolutely.
That's the way I see it.
Absolutely. Well, and it's the same thing. And my biggest concern for season 2 of The Mandalorian is now that there isn't a movie slated for a while, maybe some of those meddling CEOs are going to turn their attention to the one thing that is the most like a movie that's been incredibly successful. If not, I hope they let, you know, Filoni and Tycho kind of do their thing.
Yeah.
The first season was incredible.
Yeah,
but I just worry about how much the corporate structure of Disney gets in the way of actually producing something that's good.
And I really hope that Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni, you know, really keep the helm of this series, and Taika will unfortunately not be directing an episode this season. He stated in a live video because he was off filming another film. Which is okay, you know, that's just something for us to look forward to in season 3, season 4, season 5, however long this goes. And I feel like I had originally heard somewhere that they were planning for 5 seasons. Which, and, you know, I mean, personally, I'm a really big fan of shows really having planned out only a certain number of seasons, personally. We saw how well
and
it
having
out.
An idea of what's going to happen
where you really want to end it, you know. We saw that with The Good Place. I know How I Met Your Mother was pretty keen on their like 9, 10, 8 season thing, you know. Still, they had an idea kind of where they wanted to end. I like that because I think that, you know, that was the big flaw with 9. There was no ending. There was no let's do this in 3 episodes and we're good. It was a whole like, I guess the whole sequel trilogy in a way felt like you wrote your rough draft, but your teacher told you to rewrite your rough draft, so you did that so you could turn in to get a grade, but you still went with the ending of your original paper, not your re-rough draft, I guess. Is that that's the way to do
and
it?
And there were two different people writing the essay?
Exactly. Or, you know, you told someone to finish it, and they went off your first rough draft, not your second one. I have high expectations for Mando Season 2, I guess. I'm excited for the development of Season 3. I hope there's a Season 4. I hope there's a Season 5. I hope there's so many seasons, and they all impress me as much as the first one did in the end.
Agreed.
I hope it doesn't outstay its welcome. I hope it ends on a high note.
I think we're going to be getting new projects, though. I mean, the Kenobi thing's in works. You've got the Cassian Andor series. Like, we're going to have more stuff. I've got to get going soon, but this is one question I kind of wanted to ask before I got out of here. That being said, all these different projects and us kind of leaving on an optimistic note and kind of looking forward to the future of Star Wars, if you were in charge of Disney, Lucasfilm, if you're Kathleen Kennedy and you can, you get told, we need one more Disney Plus Star Wars show. It can be animated. It can be live action.
Do we already have Kenobi and Cassian in the works?
We have all of that stuff.
We need one more.
And you get to sit down and you make the choice. What are you going to make?
And this could be animated, live action, anything. Anything I yep. want. I'm going on. I'm going to say this just because I have no great original ideas in my head at the moment. But I think I'm really going to stick to the whole Ahsoka and Sabine story for right now. And, you know, maybe I'll revisit this answer later. But Sabine and Ahsoka looking for Ezra, I think there's a lot of potential there. I think that definitely kind of sticks to this whole timeline where the Mandalorian's at. So you can kind of have a lot of similarities. You can kind of tie some little things in here and there, maybe some characters, maybe Gecko the Bounty Hunter somewhere in there. Shout out to Dominic Pace. You know,
hey, what's up?
And I think I would like to see that animated personally.
That'd be
and
cool.
I think that's just me personally being really afraid of the whole being disappointed with live action.
So
we touched on with
follow
Ahsoka.
Up question, man.
Yeah.
Just so you're gonna animate it, right?
I'm gonna animate it.
What kind of style of animation are you going for? Are you going for like the Rebels, Clone Wars kind of look, or do you want to do something more stylized, like Forces of Destiny?
I wanna leave Daniel alone for a second, and I'm gonna stick with. I think my favorite animation has definitely been the Rebels for me. And that's a very biased answer. I'm in love with Rebels from the get. And,
yeah, that's fine, though. And I think that makes sense if you're going to continue that kind of story with Ezra and Ahsoka
and Sabine.
I think
you definitely do it in a Clone Wars sort of way, as you see now, where, you know, you saw what they did the first six seasons, and this season's very updated and just a little different. It's still mm-hmm. true to the original, but it's definitely... There's so much added on to it. There's just that extra little oomph to it. And I would like to see something like that done to it. Stay true to that original Rebel style, but, you know, maybe just detail it a little more. Or maybe add a little pop of color like Resistance, because I absolutely loved that about Resistance. The color, the way it popped, the brightness, I loved it. So maybe kind of incorporate all of that into it.
All right, Daniel, what about you?
I don't have anything original either, per
That's
se.
That's fine.
Because, like, yeah, I do want to know what happened to... Shoot, why am I literally forgetting?
Ezra, the greatest character ever.
Ezra and...
Name of my future of my future son.
My absolute favorite Chiss Ascendancy character.
Thrawn.
Gosh, why am I forgetting? Okay. So, like, I want to see what happened to him, but at the same time, the thing that I most want to see, either live action or... Technically, I think it might be easier animated. Would definitely be like, if not a beginning story where he comes from, but definitely what the books have told us about him. And I can't speak from experience about the Legends books, but I can say that I liked the canon books. I loved the canon books, actually. And I know he went through so much just to join the Empire and to become literally one of like the inner circle of Palpatine's like people that he had.
I mean,
but...
and because like there's only like I think Thrawn. You correct me if I'm wrong. In Legends, Thrawn was the only Grand Admiral. It was a rank specifically created by Palpatine for him. I think in canon there's a couple, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a few, and like I know from reading the most recent one that they came out with that like he you know he goes head to head with some of these Grand Admirals that are so involved in corruption and so like enthralled in all these like petty arguments and indifferences mm-hmm. that Thrawn is just like, I don't care about any of this. Like I'm just here to serve my emperor. But at the same time, he's like, I'm here to protect the Chiss ascendancy. I'm here to protect my people. I care more about them than anything else. But I would love to see some like animated show. If it were animated, there'd already be like an amazing like intro song. Just like Thrawn's killing bad guys, but really he's not, because they're secretly good guys, but technically he's not. I don't know, just like little things where he's just like, where he's out like doing stuff like either
Tyler,
like,
can you make
Avengers.
That the intro song for this episode?
You know, I think I
just cut
I think
that
I
and loop it.
Definitely might. I'm not gonna lie. Were we at the 2 hour mark there? Okay.
Yeah.
No, but I would definitely want to see something of Thrawn's, either his origin, which wasn't too touched upon in the canon, or, you know, just, like, little intermingled, like, adventures that he has. Because you know he's up to some random stuff,
right.
Like, that he's just, like, dealing with, you know, growing up or living in a place where there's only humans and they hate anything that's non-human and trying to out
to see everybody else. I would love to see, this is probably more of a comedic take than you're looking for, but just like imagine Thrawn and Ezra being stuck on the same Star Destroyer out in space, and they're just like, well, we could fight each other, but you know why? So no. Thrawn just shows him his art gallery and tells him his whole life story, like.
No, but that's the thing, though. Thrawn would be, like, that kind of, like, character that he would be, like, you know, we're not going to kill each other. This is what's going to happen. We're going to work together. And he would just, like, solve it all. Or he would, like, look at a tattoo of Ezra's that Ezra secretly got. And he was like, here's what I can tell you about your body art. This is your whole life.
Right.
And he would just explain Ezra from childhood what he's been through from one tattoo that says, eat fast. Or eat live fast, eat fast.
Eat fast, eat longer, eat harder. Eat fast, eat more.
Yeah, yeah. No, but that sounds super interesting. I'd be into that. I'd be into that.
I'm imagining the whole arc where Dooku and Kenobi and all them are chained together, but with Ezra and Thrawn. It's like a dramedy.
Do you want to know what mine is?
I would love. I would absolutely love to know what yours is. Me and Daniel are gonna make a bet real quick at how long your explanation will last. How long do you think, Daniel? I'm thinking at least 6 minutes.
I'm gonna text you it. I'll text you it, and then we'll make the bet.
We love you, Jonathan. We promise. Okay.
So I know. So my show is going to be live action.
Okay, live action. And
it's just, I haven't come up with a title, but like working title off the top of my head, Palpatine, Heir to Darkness.
Ooh.
Okay. Ooh.
So the whole series starts probably.
Wait, is there a theme song?
I mean, probably, but it's like, okay. It's more like ambiance. Like it's like Sith themed kind of.
Elevator music.
So the elevator pitch is basically the series picks up probably 5 years before Palpatine is inducted into the Sith Order. And the first half of the first season kind of just focuses on Plagueis. You kind of get to know him. You get the idea of what it's like to be a Sith surviving in the Republic with Jedi everywhere and still trying to push that goal. And there's a lot of, like, filling in you can do, so there's cool, like, stuff here and there. You got little mentions of Anakin being, like, a reaction in the Force. And then, you know, eventually we're introduced to, like, a young Palpatine, and we get to see how Plagueis kind of pulls him to the dark side. You kind of get, like, the mirror of Anakin seduction in watching Palpatine fall to the dark side and really embrace that. Eventually, down the line, you get to meet Maul, which is super sweet. A lot of this is coming from the fact that I really want Matt Smith to play young Palpatine.
Ooh. Oh, man. Fuck, I'm so pissed. I just remembered that that was a thing for a minute, and I'm mad all over again. I'm sorry.
Well, and I just finished watching The Crown. I don't know if you guys have seen that. It's a Netflix show about the British. It's a Netflix show about the British royalty with Queen Elizabeth. And in the first season or two, Matt Smith actually plays Elizabeth's husband. And he does a phenomenal job. It's a very serious role. And I'm picturing something kind of like that. I really like, I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, I really like sort of the intrigue surrounding the Sith, and a lot of like the politicking and how moving this chess piece now five moves later gets us to this point where we can do this thing, and kind of the dark side. And just there's a lot of really cool stuff you can pull off with that. And just kind of seeing Palpatine's life from the beginning, because we see him as an accomplished senator. We see him as a fully realized Sith Lord. We see him ruling his empire. We see the nightmare that happens after all of that. But we don't really know where he comes from. We don't really know what formed him into that person. And I think it'd be really cool to see. And I just love the Sith. I'd like to see more of them.
That's I was going to say, does the Plagueis book, like, would you incorporate any aspects from that?
Oh, yeah, I would probably pull pretty heavily from that as source material, not necessarily one for one, but, you know, take good bits out of that. I mean, like, for example, Palpatine actually knew Sifo Dyas and Count Dooku prior to even episode one, like 5-10 years before that. Like, he was acquainted with them, and he actually, Count Dooku was pretty interested in him because he was one of the few, like, non-Jedi people who could actually hold his own philosophically with Dooku.
Mm-hmm.
So they would meet up and have arguments about, like, the state of corruption in the Republic and business and all these interesting, serious topics that a lot of people don't think make good Star Wars, but I enjoy.
I enjoy what
that's
you
not
enjoy.
Bad. I mean, I'm thinking that there's definitely a need for a theme song in there, but all that aside, I mean, there's definitely a lot of stuff that, like, we don't know about Palpatine that
right.
are like, oh yeah, that's apparent. He's a bad guy, you know. He's been plotting, you know.
Well, and you can like watch him kill his master. Like, you can actually see the tragedy of Darth Plagueis. Like,
man,
that would be a really cool thing.
You said animated though, right?
No, I said live action.
Okay, live action. I was going to say, you're going to see a live action assassination then.
Yeah.
Okay, this is definitely going to be PG-13.
No.
Yeah, if not R.
R. And if R. Not... NR-17. NC-17. Whatever the rating is.
Yeah, NC-17.
NC-17. Which is, side note, is less than R, right? Because R, you have to be 18 or older.
It wasn't originally, and that's why it's a more severe rating. Back in the 80s, you had to be, I think, 16 in order to watch an R-rated movie.
Ah, gotcha.
That was a thing, and there was a lot more stuff. There was a lot more stuff allowed. That's why if you go back, this is a total tangent, but if you go back and watch like a lot of 70s, 80s horror movies that are rated R, they get away with a lot more things.
Right.
There's a lot more violence. There's a lot more gore. There's a lot more nudity. And those are all things that were cracked down on later.
Lame.
Yeah.
Rated
you can
L
blame the
lame.
MP. You can blame
MPRC?
The MPAA.
Or whatever the fuck they're called. Or I don't.
MPAA.
MPAA. Movie Picture Association.
Motion Picture
assholes.
Association of America. Yeah.
Assholes. That's fine. It's been fun,
yeah,
guys.
That's my pitch. I think that would be a cool movie, and it would fill it a lot more about sort of this really established character that we have.
I absolutely love it. I love this conversation. I think this is one of the best conversations we had. But you know what? Until next time, all you listeners, all you fine folks out there, until we see you at a convention, hopefully this year. I hope it's this year, but if not, as soon as we see you next time, thank you for listening, and may the Force
be with you.
Be with you.
Ah, there it is.
Always.
Thank you, guys.